welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering shows from radio's yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. Mystery coming up in this hour. Later on, movie actor Alan Ladd stars in Box 13. But right now, it's The Adventures of Philip Marlowe in a CBS broadcast from March 14, 1950, called The Vital Statistic.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road. And those who travel it wind up in the gutter, the prison of the grave. This time a car hop knocked me down a flight of stairs, an honest woman was strangled by a green silk sash, and a simpering dandy was shot to death. All because of a run-of-the-mill accident 500 miles away. It happened like this.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. With Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Vital Statistic.
Hey, boy, give me a paper, will you?
Paper, mister? Yes, sir. What do you like? Races, comics, or classified?
How about some news?
Star? Here you are. Thank you.
Paper!
Get out of my way!
Hey, lady! Hey, take it easy.
Drive away from here. Fast.
Well, wait a minute. What is this?
You've got to help me. I'm being followed.
Well, just a minute, sister. I think
the light's green. Drive, will you? Hurry, please.
Okay. Streamlined, from close-cropped hair the color of a smoky sunset to low-heeled slippers brocaded in bronze. And in between, a dress that conformed as close and smooth as lacquer on a Chinese vase. I made four turns in four blocks and pulled into the curb and stopped. She stabbed a look at me with a pair of sharp, jade-green eyes that said life had always been nothing but a calculated risk. Then she stepped out of the car and smiled.
You were a big help, brother. Thanks, and goodbye.
Not just like that, baby. Come here. I don't like being left out on a limb.
Now, look, you did me a favor, okay, but we drop it right here. Trouble, you wouldn't like it.
On the contrary, it's business, like keeping my own nose clean. I'm a private detective, but I didn't issue any invitation for you to jump into my car.
A private detective?
Yeah, who's chasing you, baby? The law? You can tell me out here on the street or inside over a drink.
I'll take the drink. I need it.
Yeah.
Maybe I need you, too. This might be a break. I'm Mrs. Terry LaBar, and you're,
Marlowe, Philip Marlowe. Who are you running from, Mrs. LaBar?
A woman in slacks. I don't know who she is or why she's following me, but every time I look back, she's there. This is the second day. Booth?
Yeah, sure. Say, look, why haven't you talked it over with your local policeman?
Are you working for me, private detective?
That all depends.
All right. I'm a merchant, Chinese silks. Not a little shop for 6% profit, but wholesale quick with cash at 40%.
Uh-huh. So what's the point?
No police. All it takes is a rumor of police, and I'll have doors closed on me from Seattle to Mexico.
Good evening. May I get you something?
A martini, please.
Make it two, will you?
Yes, sir. Right away.
This gets us back to the woman in slacks, huh?
Yeah. Here, Marlowe. 50 and 50. $100. I want you to locate that woman, find out who she is and why she's after me. Will you?
Not without a few more facts. For instance, could she have some connection with your business?
No. I have two men working with me. A strong one named Harlan Casey, who sees that my cash gets safely to where it's going. And a smart one named Joe Temple, who knows what to buy with it. She doesn't belong to either of them.
Oh, you sure?
Positive. Casey hates all women. Even me, I think. And Joe Temple. Well, Joe's a wonderful guy.
You hint like a woman falling in love with a fellow named Joe Temple. Care to talk about it further?
Why not? Temple and Casey have been in San Francisco all week on a deal. A big deal that'll make or break us. Every cent I have is tied up in it.
Oh. Well, what about you and Joe Temple?
Yeah. Well, perhaps this will explain. I planned to go away this weekend, but I changed my mind because I didn't want to miss his letters. I know it sounds funny, but it's true.
Those must be some letters.
They are. Like the one I got this morning. It's half business, all right. Complete account of how hard he and Casey worked for me yesterday in San Francisco. But the rest of it is to me. Personally.
I don't want to sound old-fashioned, Mrs. LaBar, but what about...
My husband?
Yeah.
That was a mistake I couldn't live with. One thing I can't stand, Marlowe, is being lied to. It leaves me vindictive. I'm suing for divorce right now. Vince LaBar is a human leech, as cold and spineless and parasitic as the real thing.
Okay, but why would your hating your husband put a woman in slacks on your trail?
I don't know.
All right, Terry, I'll worry about that, too. Any idea where I can start?
Just one. I pulled a switch on her yesterday, Marlowe, for about an hour. I trailed her to the corner of Wilshire and La Cienega, then lost her in traffic. There are several dancing schools around there. Is that worth anything?
Maybe. What kind of car was she driving?
We were both walking. She's tall and brunette. And I've seen toads with nicer eyes.
Not enough. Can't guarantee anything.
I'll keep my fingers crossed, Marlowe. Here, take the $100.
Oh.
Do what you can and report to me at my place, 204 Beechwood Circle. Okay?
Pardon, sir. Your drinks. 2 martinis?
Oh, thanks. Here you are.
Thank you, sir.
To your success, private detective.
To your health, silk merchant. Drink hearty. Her house at 204 was low and dainty and half-hidden behind the tough, slender grace of a bamboo grove. The walk was guarded by a white marble lion of Korea, and the front door, when I finally found it, turned out to be a sliding panel in a wall of oriental lattice work. As the door slid open, I was looking down the barrel of a snub-nosed pistol held very steady in the hands of a hard-eyed brunette in a pair of black slacks.
You've been looking high and low for me, haven't you, Peeper? Ever since you left that dame.
I might have been.
You're not the brightest character in the world, in spite of what you and your friends think. I spotted your car when she got in. It wasn't too tough to tag.
Where's Terry?
Sleeping off a hangover from better days.
Skip the chatter. Where is she?
Come on in and look. And that's no suggestion, sailor. It's an order. Move. Over there to the top of the stairs.
Sure, sure.
That's a good snod, boy. You're late, you know. I got what I came for, and now I'm in a hurry. Turn around.
Look, sister.
Shut up! Hey. And happy landing!
Oh, there were 10 stairs down to the basement. And with a shove reinforced by the 45, I hit all but the first three. By the time I worked all the kinks out and was back upstairs again, she was gone. I started through the house, then slowly from one room to another, turning on lights as I went, looking for what I knew was going to be a very sick client. When I got as far as the study where somebody had gone through the desk drawers with what must have been a snowplow, and I still hadn't found Terry, I got that numb feeling in my stomach. I started out a side door that opened into the patio. But then I heard a whistle from the front walk. I cut back through the house instead and waited near the door.
Terry! Hey, Terry, can I come in? It's little Joe, the Frisco kid. What happened to your weekend trip, honey? Who are you? What do you want?
Hiya, Temple.
How do you know me?
Mrs. LaBar hired me today just after she canceled the weekend. She gave me a rundown.
She hired you? What do you mean?
I'm a private detective named Marlowe.
Why would she hire you?
Because she was being followed by a brunette in slacks. She didn't like it, and that's all the information you're going to get, so relax.
You say Terry isn't here? Isn't home?
Not so far, no. Come on back here to the study, Temple. I want you to look at something. Somebody's gone through the desk in an awful hurry.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you mean.
Maybe you know something about what's missing, huh? You and Mrs. LaBar were fairly close, from what I'm told.
The letters. The letters are gone. Terry kept my letters in this bottom drawer.
Ah. By the way, Temple, where's your sidekick, Harlan Casey?
Oh, I don't know. We both left San Francisco yesterday. He hates to fly, so I assume he took a train. He ought to be here in L.A. now. Well, you don't think Casey's mixed up in this, do you?
I don't know. It could be.
Vince LaBar. That's who it was that got those letters. It was Vince LaBar. They were really love letters. The business part was nothing. And LaBar is the dog-in-the-manger kind of guy who wants everyone to be unhappy if he
that
is.
That fits. That fits, Temple. With a smart lawyer, your letters to Terry becomes grade-A material for a countersuit for divorce. Sure, he could make it stick and also get a fat settlement under community property laws. Now, listen, here's what you've
Marlowe.
Got.
Marlowe, it's Terry. Terry!
Temple,
Terry!
Wait!
Terry! Look at her, Marlowe. Look at her! She's dead.
Alan Matthews, homicide detail.
Marlowe Matthews, there's a dead one out here. A woman, you got a pencil?
Always. Go ahead, Marlowe.
I'm at 204 Beechwood Circle. The woman was a client.
Circle. Yeah, go on.
She was strangled with a green silk sash from my lounging pajamas, Matthews, sometime within the last, I'd say, hour.
Yeah.
Her name was Terry LaBar.
Hey, wait, Wolf. Terry LaBar. Wait a minute, Marlowe. Listen, we got a teletype here from a sheriff in Empire, Oregon, come in 5 minutes ago.
So?
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. Says some guy named Jess Freeman from L.A. was killed there this morning in a traffic accident, was loaded with big dough, but doesn't look the type. And the only other identification on him was a business card from one Terry LaBar. Yeah. You got a helpful answer for that?
Wait a minute. Temple, do you know anything about a man named Jess Freeman? He was killed in Oregon today in a traffic accident and had one of Terry's cards on him.
Freeman?
Yeah.
No, I don't remember him.
No dice, Matthews.
Who are you talking to?
Joe Temple, one of Terry LaBar's associates. He's here. Never heard of Jess Freeman.
Yeah. Okay, Marlowe.
Huh?
No, they sent his prints to Washington. A tattoo says he was in the Navy once. They'll pin him down. Now, about out there, any idea who killed him?
Yeah, maybe a brunette in slacks. I think I know where to find her.
Well, it's dandy. Sit on it till we get there, Marlo. I'll be right out.
Wait a minute, Lieutenant.
What?
Look, right now it's only a hunch, but if I move fast and quiet, I might be able to develop it into something worthwhile, okay?
Okay, but keep in touch, Phil.
Yeah.
I still can't believe it about Terry Marlowe.
Now, look, why don't you just go home and take it easy? I'll tell Lieutenant Matthews where he can find you, huh?
Thanks. 1310 Marlborough Drive.
Right. Now, tell me, you know where Vince LaBar lives?
Yeah, the Laverne Apartments on Rossmore. Uh-huh. He's got a suite on the top floor, 7A.
7A.
And, if it's any help, he drives a new green Nash sedan. But I thought you said that it was that brunette who...
I did. And if Vince LaBar can't lead me to the lady in long pants, I'll eat my shirt. What's more, Matthews will see to it personally.
Yes, what do you want?
Some quiet conversation with Vince LaBar. I'm Philip Marlowe, private detective.
How exciting. Had I known you were coming, I'd have baked a cake.
Ah, you're breaking me up. I was hired by your wife tonight.
Get out
your
of
wife
here.
Is dead, LaBar. She was murdered.
Terry murdered?
Yeah. Now, if you don't mind, I'll come in, huh? She was killed because of a packet of letters, LaBar.
Oh, no.
The kind that are a cinch to cause a big stir in anybody's divorce court. Stir big enough to swing a countersuit in your favor.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Letters. Joe Temple's letters to Terry, the ones you arranged to have stolen tonight.
Oh, you must be crazy.
Her death wasn't part of the plan, LaBar. That was one of those bum deals. A robbery that got out of hand, wound up as a murder.
Oh, no, wait.
Now, where is she, LaBar? Who's the brunette in slacks, and where do I find her?
You get out of here, or I'll have the police
help
you.
Oh, shut up. Not only steal letters, but ashtrays, too, huh? Like this coy little number here, a doghouse. Scotty's Drive-In, Wilshire and La Cienega. Okay, LaBar, that's
Stand
all.
Still.
Oh, now a gun, huh? They say you're yellow, LaBar, but you're not. You're just stupid.
There's a terrace outside those doors, Marlowe. Those with the iron grill. Go on out there. Go on. I don't think Terry's dead, and I don't think she hired you. I think you're working for that lousy louse, Joe Temple, and if so, he'll need a battalion of private detectives before I'm through.
You're through right now, LaBar. You're too dumb to see it.
Go on. Clear over to the rail. Keep your back to me. It's 7 floors down, Marlowe, to a concrete driveway. Just in case you get jumpy.
The moment Vince LaBar and the Courage caliber .32 he held in his right hand made it out of the apartment and on the run for the elevator, I kicked through the plate glass door. And I spent the next 2 minutes alternately swearing, straining, and nicking myself while I played contortionist. In and out of the fancy snake grill work on my wrought iron cage until finally I reached the inside handle. And I was free out and over to the telephone in a big hurry. Because for my money, the icing on LaBar's voice left Joe Temple someplace on the short side. What the life insurance people call good risk.
Hello?
Marlowe, Temple, listen hard. Your life's in danger.
What?
LaBar, you had him tagged from the first. And he's after those letters, all right.
But what about the girl in slacks?
Well, I think she might have a connection with a drive-in on Wilshire and La Cienega, a place called Scotty's Inn. I'm going to check it. Now, tell me, any word from Terry's muscle man yet?
Harlan Casey?
Yeah.
No, nothing, Marlowe. But look, can I meet you and talk
to
you?
No, Vince LaBar had a gun and a short temper when he left here. I'll make his work any easier. Just stay away from open windows, Temple. I'll call you. Scotty's Inn was eating on the run in the finest California tradition. A mammoth circle of steel under glass painted a dazzling yellow and blue, surrounded by a half a dozen cars containing teenaged couples with smudged lipstick and the giggles. The second after I pulled in and parked, something in slacks with false eyelashes, a waist you could span with a handcuff, and a fixed frontline chorus girl smile flipped the card marked Ginger against my windshield. Handed me a menu that still had the froth from an earlier customer's milkshake in one corner.
Well, it be, mister.
Just coffee, Ginger.
Cream?
Uh-uh, information.
Oh, it's you again.
Huh?
Look, baby, what I told you on the phone 10 minutes ago still goes, huh?
About what?
About Rose Facetta, the girl you described. Long black hair, a nice shape, you're infatuated, but you don't know the name and address. So I was nice. I gave the name, told you to look the address up in the phone book, period. Don't be so lazy, baby.
Wait a minute, Ginger. I didn't call you before, but that dime cup of coffee will bring you a $10 tip if you tell me who did.
Hey, you want the guy who called. I don't know any names, but you're not him.
Mm.
He didn't talk up like you do. But what's all the fuss, baby? Rose Facetta's got a guy. She's spoken for. Besides, a handsome fellow
sweetheart,
like you should...
Sweetheart, this is business, strictly, believe me.
Oh.
What's the address? Come on.
2428 Havenhurst Drive, bottom floor.
Thanks. Here. Here's the 10 I promised
no,
you.
No, never mind.
Hmm?
The name was free to him, so why should I charge you? Besides...
Beside what?
I like the way you said sweetheart. Come on back sometime, will you, baby, when you want more than coffee?
Okay. When I want more than coffee and less than murder, I will. Stay out of it, Ginger. It was definite double talk, but the effect was what I wanted. Ginger, with mouth wide open and staring after me like my ears were on backwards. That way, she might be scared out of making a simple curiosity spike telephone call to the popular Rose Facetta, which would trumpet my arrival loud, clear, and prematurely. 10 minutes later, I was parked away from number 2824, Havenhurst. As I got out of my car and started toward the place, I found Vince Labar's green sedan on the opposite side of the street and carefully tucked into the shadows of a pair of long-haired pepper trees. It was a good time for me to be careful. So when I knocked on the front door, which showed yellow light at the threshold and was the starting point for something not too close to music, I did it with the butt end of my .38.
Yeah, who is it?
Ziggy, friend of Ginger's. She asked me to deliver you a message, Rose.
Oh, all right. What's the message, friend? Why, you lousy...
Don't try it, sunshine. There's no law against shooting ladies and knocking downstairs. Now back off. Come on, move, but not too far. The moment I want you in between me and Vince Labar.
Who?
Look, Angel, it's all real plain. Those suitcases behind you there are packed. His car's outside. He's after the letters. Oh, no.
There goes Vince now, Buster. Well, peeper, your opener stinks.
Get inside fast.
Sure, sure. Any place in particular, sailor?
That chair near the desk. Keep your hands in your lap.
Okay. If it'll please you, Mr. Detective, I'll be very glad to. After all, you're my guest, and I should be nice to you.
Now we talk like a little lady, huh, Rose? Vince Labar picked up the letters from you as scheduled, and you're getting ready to run because you killed Terry, and you'd rather not be around for the question and answer period, right?
I didn't kill her. I just knocked her down.
No. You didn't kill her. You just slowed down her breathing somewhat with a pajama sash.
You're wrong, copper. I
skip it. Doesn't add any other way. Go on, answer it.
Who is it?
Mr. Shirley. What's going on in there, Mr. Setter?
Landlord?
No, the jerk who lives in the top half of this place, along with a few thousand
French
poodles. Mr.
Setter, if you don't open this door, I'm going to call the police. I distinctly heard a noise, and I...
Come on in, Mr. Shirley.
Well, what's going on in here? Who are you?
Never mind that now. Get on the phone and call the police.
Oh. Oh, yes, of course. Yes, certainly. Operator, I want the police. 2824 Havenhurst
Drive. Look, hero. Yes. You're a little mixed up about something.
Yeah, and you're just a kid to straighten me out. Those letters you got at Terry's place were written by Joe Temple.
All right.
Was your boyfriend Vince heading for Temple when he left here?
I can't.
My heart, sister.
All right. Maybe he was. Now leave me alone.
Not quite. Hey, you, Mr. Shirley.
Oh, yes?
In that desk next to you, there's a gun. Keep it on until the law arrives.
Oh.
Ladies wanted for murder.
Well, yes, but what if she should...
Yeah, then shoot, Shirley, fast. Because if you don't, she'll kill you. Tell the cops I'll fill in the blanks later.
Oh, now, wait, why must you leave? Why don't we both watch her?
Because a guy named Joe Temple needs my help a lot more than you do. The home address Temple had given me turned out to be lights in a quiet house on a quiet street named Marlboro. I was there out of my car and running for the front door when they came. I chucked my gun out of the holster, got close into the building, and moved up until I was on a line with a pair of half-open patio doors. And I saw something I hadn't expected. On the floor that was littered with a broken lamp, pieces of vase, and overturned furniture was Vince Labar. Doubled up. Dead. And standing over him, his face the color of soft cement, a .32 dangling in his limp right hand, was Joe Temple. When he saw me, he tried to talk, but the words jammed in his throat.
Father.
When I stepped into the room, he began to tremble.
Father, I shot him. I couldn't help it. He was gonna...
Sit down, Temple. Get hold of yourself. You got any brandy around?
Over on that table near the phone.
Oh.
He was out of his mind, Marlowe. An absolute maniac. He said he was gonna kill me.
So you lunged for him. There was a fight and you came up with a gun, huh?
Yeah. And when he started for me again, I pulled the trigger. And then I did it again. And a third time.
Yeah. Drink this.
He brought the letters back, Marlowe. They're inside on the floor where he threw them. He said they didn't mean anything anymore. That he and that girl in the slacks had taken care of Terry.
Take it easy, Temple, easy.
He seemed to go crazy. He said I was a wife stealer, the cause of his trouble, and that I deserved death. Well, that's when I jumped at him. It was terrible, Marlowe.
Yeah. Well, between the two of us, we've just about got all the answers, which is usually a good time to call the police, huh?
Well, what do you mean, just about got all the answers, Marlowe? What else is there?
Jess Freeman, the guy Lieutenant Matthews told us about when we were over at Terry's place, remember?
Oh, yes, that traffic crash in Empire, Oregon. But why should that figure in this, Marlowe?
It shouldn't, but I think it does.
I'm inside, Detective Lieutenant Matthews speaking.
Marlowe Matthews, another dead one on the Terry Labar case.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Vince Labar, her husband, he was shot.
Who did it, Marlowe, do you know?
Yeah, a guy named Joe Temple. It was self-defense. We're coming in, Matthews. I'll take that gun, Temple. You get the letters. Let's go. When we got into my car and started downtown, Temple was more relaxed. And he talked easily until we passed Vince Labar's sparkling green sedan parked a block away. Once again, close into the shadows, and once again, empty. Real empty. The sight of it closed him up tight for the rest of the trip. When we walked into police headquarters and through the quarter of a mile of glossy corridor leading to the door marked homicide, he didn't open up any. But it didn't matter, really, because it's police rule never to talk to two men about the same thing at the same time. And I was first. Matthew said hello without shaking hands, waved me into an uncomfortable seat, and then lit his pipe while I brought him up to date. And it was his turn.
So Rose Fasetta killed Terry Labar so that she could get the letters Joe Temple had written, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Did this so that her boyfriend, Vince Labar, could raise a lot of fuss in divorce court with the letters, file a counter-suit, that kind of stuff?
That's the whole deal.
Yeah, with Temple making it a doubleheader by shooting Vince when Vince came to kill him.
That's it, Matthews. Yeah. If you believe Temple.
Huh?
And if Temple hadn't slipped.
All right, now what are you getting at, Phil?
That when I was on the phone with you early at night, you asked me if Temple or I knew anything about a Jess Freeman who was killed in a traffic accident in Empire, Oregon?
Right, right, but you didn't.
No, no. Nor did I mention the town of Empire to Temple. Oh. Yet a half hour ago, just before I called you, Temple came up with that name.
Oh, then Marlowe, you... Oh. Hold my calls, Mooney. Marlowe, you mean...
I mean that Joe Temple killed Terry Labar. Rose just knocked her out and got the letters. Temple strangled her while she was still unconscious.
Yeah, but why?
Because a guy identified as Jess Freeman got himself killed in a traffic accident.
So?
A guy who I think was actually Holland Casey, Terry's two-fisted assistant, who together with Joe Temple was crossing the boss lady.
Yeah, but Marlowe...
And that left Temple in a very hot spot. To save himself, he had a kill.
Can you prove all this, Marlowe?
No. Not a word of it. It's conjecture. But conjecture that fits, Matthews.
Yeah.
When Temple found Terry unconscious in the garden, that was his chance. He took it.
Now, look, Phil, you're guessing at 90%.
Sure, I'm guessing. But not in the dark. I know how these guys think and act. I've done too many cases not to know. Now, listen for a minute, will you, Matthews?
Phil, I got
to
have facts. All right, okay.
Now, look. Temple had to get those letters back, right?
Yeah.
And the last one in particular, because in the last one, this is the way it's got to figure. He had lied to Terry about being in San Francisco with Casey yesterday. When actually Casey was in Empire, Oregon.
Yeah, when Casey was killed up there, the fact was bound to come out.
Yeah, it's a good reason.
Matthews, will you let me finish, please?
All right, finish.
Temple knew Terry would find out. He knew that she couldn't stand a liar and a partner who'd double-cross her. Temple knew that she'd get him and ruin him if it took her the rest of her life.
So he came back to get the letter before she could read it, but she hadn't left town as planned, huh?
Ironically enough, because she didn't want to miss one of his letters.
Yeah, but look, I'm a policeman, Phil. I gotta have facts.
All right. You're the policeman. You got labs and technicians. You'll get the facts. And I'll bet you it figures just like I say.
Yeah, okay, Phil. Okay.
And another thing, Matthews.
What?
When you talk to Temple, who's holding the packet of letters now like a real good boy.
Yeah.
You'll find the last one missing. It'll be in his pocket. I'll bet you on that. Well, that ought to do it, Lieutenant.
Yeah, with one exception, Phil.
Huh?
How did Temple maneuver all this? Getting the letters from Rose Fasetta, then setting up that self-defense deal.
I don't know. But my guess is that Vince got the letters from Rose just before I arrived at her place. But when he got into his car...
Oh, yeah. Temple was waiting, slugged him, drove back to his own house, dropped the body in the living room, shot him when he heard you coming.
Something like that, Matthews.
Uh-huh.
See if you can't get it out that way.
Yeah, well, don't worry, Phil. If it's true, we'll get it out.
It'll be true.
Oh, now would you ask Mr. Temple to come in, please, Mr. Marlowe?
I'll be glad to, Lieutenant. Say, Temple, Lieutenant would like to see you.
All right, Marlowe. I,
I think I can speak coherently now.
Good, good. They like to get the facts straight in there. Go ahead.
Yes, of course. Good night, Marlowe, and thanks for your help.
Oh, good evening, Mr. Temple. Sit down and start talking.
When I got into my car, the new day was starting to push the black out of the sky. And the early morning air smelled fresh and cool and clean. Yeah, the whole night had been confused and complicated. But I knew that by the time Matthews had finished with Temple, there'd be no questions left unanswered. That would be great, wouldn't it? If everything could be that way. No questions left unanswered.
Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe on Tuned to Yesterday from March 14, 1950 on CBS. At that time, it was part of the network's Saturday night lineup at 8:30. Over 13 million people tuned into that broadcast. You are listening to An Hour of Mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for Box 13 with Alan Ladd as star in a syndicated episode from December 20th, 1948 called The Treasure of Hang Lee.
Box 13 with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
Box 13, care of the Star Times. If your advertisement is on the level, I think you'll find this worth your time. Be in the Quan Hai shop in Chinatown at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. Pretend you want to buy some jade. Reject the first two pieces offered, then mention the Hang Lee piece in the window. Buy the Hang Lee. This will be worth a lot of money to you. Remember, it's the Quan Hai shop in Chinatown.
Ask for jade, but reject the first two pieces. Then mention the Hang Lee piece in the window. Go back and wait for further instructions. That was the letter. No signature. It sounded interesting, and it was. If you like murder.
I don't get it, Mr. Holliday. Why should you reject the first two pieces?
Ah, that's what makes the letter interesting, Susie. Why reject the first two pieces and then mention the Hang Lee piece?
All right. Why?
I think I've got an idea.
What is it?
Pretty obvious, Susie. Look, the letter doesn't say anything about identifying myself, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Well, if I follow instructions, follow them exactly, I'll be tipping myself to someone in the store. Do you get it?
Oh, sure. Whoever wrote the letter will be there, too, waiting for you to follow instructions.
That's a great deduction.
And I did it all myself, too.
You sure did. Okay, Susie, I'm going to make like Marco Polo and visit our Chinese friends. It took me a half an hour to drive to Chinatown and another 10 minutes to find the shop of Quan Hai. I looked in the windows. There was the usual line of stuff. Back scratchers, Quan Yins, bamboo trinkets, red lacquer bowls. But only one piece of jade. It was roughly square and seemed to have been broken. It looked like a part of a bigger piece. So I went into the shop. There were six or seven other people besides myself, and, well, they were looking at curios, and no one paid any attention to me. Then a young Chinese clerk smiled and came over to me.
Oh, yes, sir. Can I help you, please?
Oh, yes, I want to buy a piece of jade.
Yes, sir. You want a certain color?
Well, I don't know.
This is a very nice piece, sir. It is what we call the mutton fat color.
It's very nice, but not quite what I want.
A ring, perhaps? Cuff links? A snuff bottle?
I don't know. You see, it's for a gift.
Oh. This piece is very fine, sir, and the carving is excellent, but it is not very old.
There's a piece in the window, the only piece. What is that?
The piece in the window, sir?
Yes, it's a Hang Li piece, isn't it? Well?
If you will please to follow me, sir.
But the piece is in the window.
I know, sir. But for that piece, you will have to see Mr. Kwan. This way, please. If you please, sir, in here. I will send for Mr. Kwan. You will please excuse me now, sir, the other customers.
Yeah, sure, thank you.
It is nothing at all, sir.
He went out, and I heard a key turn in the lock of the door. For a moment, I was left alone in a room that was different from the rest of the store. Very different. Instead of the usual junk that tourists buy, this room was a treasure house. Rose quartz, wonderful jade screens, beautiful porcelain bowls that seemed to be lighted from inside. Lacquerware that shone like satin in the dim light. I was looking around me when...
Good afternoon, sir.
Oh, how do you do, Mr. Kwan?
I am Mr. Kwan. Please to sit down, sir.
Thank you.
May I help you, Mr.?
My name is Holliday, Dan Holliday.
I am honored, Mr. Holliday.
Your clerk told me I'd have to see you about that Hang Li jade in the window.
Yes, that is true. You want that piece, Mr. Holliday?
Yes, I'd like to buy it.
One moment. It is strange. That Hang Li piece has lain in the window for 2 weeks now. You are the first to ask for it.
I saw it and liked it.
Of course. You are a man of excellent taste. It is a very fine piece. Incredibly ancient and incredibly valuable.
Oh? Well, maybe I can't afford it.
The Hang Li piece, Mr. Kwan.
Thank you, Lan. That is all.
Yes, Mr. Kwan.
Does he always lock the door when he leaves this room?
There are very valuable things in this room, Mr. Holliday.
Oh, I see. But the Hang Li piece, is it valuable, Mr. Kwan?
Yes, Mr. Holliday. So valuable that there is no price on it. Odd that you should ask for it.
You have no idea how odd.
It is a piece of a larger work, a 12 inches by 12 inches to be exact. This is only one-third of the original.
May I see it?
Certainly.
It looks like a wonderful piece of jade.
Do you know what Confucius said about jade?
Well, I seem to have heard quite a few things Confucius was supposed to have said, but I doubt if any of them would fit the bill just now.
Yes, but Confucius said that jade is like truth. It gives out a bright rainbow, and it shows a pure spirit among the hills and streams.
Truth gives out a bright rainbow. That's a very pretty figure of speech, Mr. Kwan.
Yes. Truth is very often a figure of speech. Is it not, Mr. Holliday?
Yes, I'm afraid you're right. But about this piece?
Ah, yes. You will note the carving, very beautifully done.
These are Chinese characters, aren't they?
Yes. It is too bad the other two-thirds of the entire piece are missing.
Oh? Why is that? I mean, beyond the fact that it seems a shame to ruin such a magnificent thing.
Foolish old Chinese legend, Mr. Holliday. It says that he who translates the writing will be led to a treasure beyond all price.
But you'd have to have all three pieces.
You would need all three pieces.
And where are the other two?
I do not know.
I see. Well, Mr. Kwan, how much for this piece?
Mr. Holliday, it has no price.
You mean it's not for sale?
It is not for sale.
But I don't understand. It was in the window. And
yes, and no one inquired about it. Perhaps because collectors would not be interested in a broken piece.
That could be. But that still doesn't explain why you had it in your window, and yet not have it for sale.
Because, Mr. Holliday, the piece is yours.
I beg your pardon? What did you say?
The Hang Li piece is yours. There is no price on it.
But I can't take it without paying for it.
You ask for it?
Of course I did, Mr. Kwan, but I'm prepared to pay for it.
I am sorry. There is no price. The piece is yours for the taking.
Well, suppose someone else had come in and asked for it. Would you have given it to anyone?
Only to one who asked for it by name, as you did.
I don't understand.
Truth, Mr. Holliday, is a figure of speech. I have told you the truth. The Hang Li piece is yours. Please take it. Now, if you will excuse me...
Just a moment, Mr. Kwan. Suppose I refuse to walk out with this.
It is a matter of indifference to me.
Then, as a matter of curiosity, how much is the piece worth?
That depends upon who has it.
And that means what?
That is hard to say. To a collector, the Hungley piece would be worth perhaps no more than $100. To you, it is worth what you make it. To me, it is priceless. Ah, here is Lunn. Lunn, please show Mr. Holliday to the door. His business here is concluded.
It will be great honor, Mr. Kwan.
Just so. Well, goodbye, Mr. Holliday, and may the bat roost upon your roof.
May the what rest for where?
The bat is a Chinese symbol for good fortune. Goodbye.
Please to come with me, Mr. Holliday.
You're sure you won't change your mind, Mr. Kwan?
About what?
The Hangley piece?
It is yours. Perhaps we shall meet again, Mr. Holliday.
Oh, wait, just a minute, Mr. Kwan.
He is gone, Mr. Holliday. Now, if you will please to follow me.
All right. Thanks.
Is there anything else you wish, Mr. Holliday?
Yes, I think there is.
And that is?
I wish someone would tell me why I advertise for adventure and get mixed up in things like this. Goodbye. So, with the Hangley piece tucked under my arm and a great big question mark tucked under my hat, I left Quan Lee's place. For a moment, I stood in front of the store. No one followed me out, although I knew that whoever had sent me the letter was watching. So I drove home and waited in my apartment. I didn't wait long. Hello?
Miss Holliday?
Yes, it is.
I'm the one who sent you the letter. Bring the Hangley piece to 721 South Ferry Street, room 6.
Just a minute. How do you know I've got the piece?
I was in the store this afternoon.
Mm-hmm. And why didn't you ask me for it there?
You're wasting time. Please bring the Hangley piece. You won't be sorry.
What was that address again?
721 South Ferry Street, room 6.
And the name?
You've got all you need to know. I'll be waiting.
Well, well, well. All right, Mr. South Ferry Street. We'll see what you have to offer.
Please go back in, Mr. Holliday.
Oh, I've got company.
Please go back. Sit down.
I just got up.
Sit down.
Well, thank you. Won't you?
You're much younger than I thought you'd be.
Oh, is that so? Well, keep pointing that gun at me and I can age 10 years.
You have quite a sense of humor for a murderer.
Murder? Well, this is news. Go on, Miss...
Loring. Greta Loring.
How do you do?
Doesn't the name Loring mean anything, Mr. Holliday?
Beyond the fact that it belongs to a very pretty girl holding a very ugly gun, I'm completely at loss.
Lying seems to be another of your doubtful accomplishments.
Oh, yes, I'm very talented, but I'm no good at puzzles. You see, I give up too easily.
I had a hard time finding you, especially since you changed your name.
No, this is news. I'm a murderer, a liar, and I'm living under an alias.
This afternoon, you gave yourself away by getting the Hangley jade from that shop. Sooner or later, I knew I'd trace you through that piece of jade.
Uh-huh. So you were there, too?
I've watched that shop for days, waiting for you to get the Hangley.
And now that I've got it?
I'm going to take it. Then kill you.
In that order, I suppose.
Give it to me.
It's right there on the table in front of you.
It was a long time ago that you killed my father. I was a little girl then.
Lady, how you've grown up, complete with a gun and a murderous desire to kill me.
I've had that desire for a long time. Ever since I found my father dead. Murdered.
Go on, Miss Loring. What then?
You know as well as I do. And being charming and flip won't help.
Now look, Miss Loring. Maybe you've got the wrong man. Have you thought of that? After all, you said I seemed to be much younger than you thought I'd be.
All I know is that you went after the Hangley jade. No one else in the world but you would want that piece. No one else would know what it means.
That's circumstantial evidence, Miss Loring.
Stay where you are. We're through talking, Mr. Holliday. Or shall I call you Benson?
You can call me anything you like, but think before you squeeze that trigger.
I've thought quite a lot. Now, I'm going to take the jade.
All right. Here. Take it.
Giving it to me won't solve everything. Stay there. No, don't.
With a slam of the door, Miss Loring was gone, and so was the Hangley jade. And so was a piece of my coat where the bullet from her gun ripped through it. But I had the gun. Maybe it could be traced. But first, I had to see a man about a piece of jade at 721 South Ferry Street.
Yes, who is it?
Holiday.
All right. Just a minute.
Come on in. Now, give me the Hangley piece. I'm sorry, but you're about a half hour too late.
What are you talking about?
Well, I haven't got it.
Maybe this will show you I don't like jokes.
Now, look, whatever your name is, take that gun out of my ribs. I'm developing an allergy.
Give me the Hangley piece.
What if I told you a girl who called herself Greta Loring took it away from me?
What? Loring? You have that name right?
I have every reason to remember it, but good.
Where is she?
I don't know.
Were you... All right. Turn around. Face the window.
Now, look, fella, this
Turn around. Now, where did that girl go?
I told you, I don't know.
How did she find you?
The same way you did. She was in Quan Hai's shop this afternoon.
Uh-huh. Okay, Mr. Holiday. Thank you for running that errand for me.
It was a nice hit. Over the top of my head. When the birds and the bees left my skull, I sat up. The room was dark. I started to get to my feet when...
You're feeling better, Mr. Holiday?
Huh? Mr. Kwan.
Oh, I'm flattered you recognize my voice. But you are feeling better?
Except for a new head, I couldn't ask for anything more.
I'm sorry I did not arrive in time to save you that inconvenience.
Mm-hmm. But now that you are here, why?
Why am I here? I came to see your friend.
Today I have no friends.
Wait a moment. I shall turn on the light.
Well, I could use some.
Here we are.
Mostly on what's going on.
Yes, here. You gave our friend the Hangley jade?
Now, wait a minute.
Just a moment. Before you answer, you had better look in this little alcove. Look, Mr. Holiday.
Who's that? He's dead.
Yes, quite dead. Stabbed in the back.
He's not the man I came here to see.
I'm afraid not. I wish he were.
Well, then who is this?
One of the men I have been seeking for 10 years.
10 years? Look, Mr. Kwan, I have a large headache. You're no aspirin with your Chinese puzzles.
The man you came to see was named Benson.
That doesn't help.
The dead man there is a man named Fisher.
And what about a man named Loring?
Oh, you know a man named Loring.
I met his daughter today.
Ah, his daughter. Now I am beginning to see. But I presume you gave Mr. Benson the Hangley jade you got from me today?
I did not. Mr. Loring's daughter relieved me of it.
She has it?
You know she has.
I have only your word for that.
That's all you're going to get, Mr. Kwan.
I think you mean that. Very well, Mr. Holiday. I shall have to leave now.
Oh, no, you don't. There's a murdered man here. How do I know you didn't kill him?
That is a reasonable question. You have only my word that I did not kill him.
And you'll go with me to the police. Oh, it's funny, huh?
No. I was thinking of something, a proverb. And being Chinese, I am permitted one proverb.
I've got one for you, Mr. Kwan. A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. Right now, you're the number one bird.
Very good, Mr. Holiday. But my proverb is more to the point. Two men of different minds must soon say goodbye.
We're going to the police, Mr. Kwan.
You leave me no alternative but this.
Would you use that gun?
I'm afraid I would, if you tried to stop me. But please, do not blame me, Mr. Holiday. This is the fault of my ancestors.
Your ancestors?
They invented gunpowder. Goodbye.
And so there I was, but where? I called the police and reported the murder without giving my name. I didn't want to stick around because I had other things to do. I had a bullet hole through my coat and out of my head and a big burning desire to catch up with Mr. Benson and Miss Loring, not to mention a certain Mr. Kwan. The only lead I had was Greta Loring's gun that I'd taken from her. If she had bought it in the city, it would be registered. So I made one more phone call and found out what I wanted, her address. It was in an apartment building, and her apartment was number 8. I pressed the buzzer.
Yes, who...
Good evening, Miss Loring.
How did you find me?
Oh, I had to. I always return things that I borrow. I believe this is your gun.
What are you going to do?
Play questions and answers.
Please, get out of here.
This afternoon, you called me a murderer. Why?
I thought you were someone else.
Who? Benson?
Yes.
Oh, but I'm not.
I know that now.
Oh, Now she tells me, after she puts a bullet through my coat. You know, Miss Loring, 2 inches higher and you'd have had yourself a corpse. Me. I dislike being a corpse. Now you'll talk.
Benson killed my father in China 10 years ago.
It seems he also killed a man called Fisher.
David Fisher?
David or not, he's just a number at the morgue by now.
Then Benson is still alive.
I think he is.
And you came here.
Well, of course, why not?
Well, don't you see what you've done?
Done?
Think about it.
Oh. He wouldn't know where to find you, but I told him I'd met you. And he'll keep track of me.
And come here.
Listen, have you still got that hang leaks, Jade?
Yes.
Well, he wants that. If you give it to him, maybe he'll go away.
My father was killed because he had the hang leak piece.
What is there about that piece?
There were 3 pieces, all part of the same screen. It was something about a treasure.
Mm-hmm. And the carving on the screen would lead to the treasure.
Yes.
You have 1 piece, Benson has the other 2. One he killed your father to get, the other he killed Fisher to get.
And he'll come here after this 3rd piece.
Hey, come on, we've got to get out of here. Wait, where's your phone?
Well, right there, but...
I'm going to call the police.
Not yet, Mr. Holliday.
Juan.
Yes, I followed you, Mr. Holliday. Then, because I fear Miss Loring would not extend her hospitality to me, I came up the fire escape.
Juan. Juan, my father told
yes,
me...
Miss Loring, yes. Your father, Fisher and Benson, killed an old Taoist priest in China to get the Hang Li screen and its secret.
My father never killed anyone.
I'm afraid he did.
But there are 3 pieces off the screen.
Yes, Mr. Holliday. The 3 men did not trust one another. They broke the screen up into 3 pieces. 1 valueless without the other 2.
Why? Why did they do that?
Because they had to leave China and go their separate ways. They arranged to meet later.
Mm-hmm. But Benson killed Loring.
Yes, but Loring did not have his piece of the Hang Li. I got it before Benson got to him.
And you put the piece in the window to trap Benson. Why, Mr. Kwan? Why?
The Taoist priest was my honorable father.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't know that.
I'm sure you did not. I have been all over the world, waiting, hoping that sooner or later, the murderers of my father would trap themselves. 2 are dead, and the 3rd...
Benson?
Yes, Benson.
Must be Benson.
You let him in, Mr. Holliday.
Let him in, or you crazy, Kwan. He's a killer.
I said let him in 1 moment. I will take that gun you put on the table, Mr. Holliday. Give it to me.
Take it.
Thank you. Now I have 2 guns. Mr. Benson probably has 1. Let him in, Mr. Holliday.
If you think I'm going to open that door and let him in, you're crazy.
I have 2 guns. Are you afraid, Mr. Holliday?
All right. Slowing, get back. Next to the wall. Now.
You. Get back in there.
Better not come in, Benson.
Move away now. Who's that?
Come in, Mr. Benson. Come in.
Holliday, stand in front of me. Right where you are. All right? Go ahead and shoot.
I would hit Mr. Holliday.
That's right.
I'm sorry, Mr. Holliday, but you seem to have been caught between the dragon and the tiger.
I want that Hang Li piece.
I'll give it to
him. Yes, do that, Miss Loring. Give it to him.
Benson, you've already killed 2 men.
The 3rd won't make any difference. The Hang Li piece, Miss Loring, on the table.
There. Take it.
Good enough. All right, Holliday, move in front of me. Always in front of me. Now stop. Hand me the jade. You, Miss Loring, hand it to me. That's it. Now I'm going to move back toward the door. If you shoot, Holliday gets it. Stop right here.
Mr. Holliday, my life means nothing because I have devoted it to this moment. But I regret this inconvenience to you.
Kwan, think what you're doing. Benson won't get away. The police will have his description and be picked up within an hour.
Nice dreaming, Holliday.
Mr. Kwan, don't. Stay where you are.
I regret, Mr. Holliday. Twist away, quickly! Twist away!
Mr. Holliday!
I'm all right. I got out of the way. But...
Mr. Benson has gone to his ancestors.
Mr. Kwan, are you all right?
Yes. It's quite all right, thank you.
You're hit. Miss Loring, call a doctor faster.
No, please. The 3 pieces of the screen. Give them to me. You will find 2 of them in Mr. Benson's pocket.
Look, Mr. Kwan. You're hurt badly. You've got to have a doctor.
No. That would do no good. Old Chinese proverb. Greatest coward is he who fears death.
I'm sorry, Mr. Kwan.
The Hang Li pieces. Please. Put them together.
All right. There they are.
The treasure of Hong Li. Right here.
Treasure? But...
Not gold. My people learned centuries ago that real treasure is not gold. Treasure of Hong Li is written here. Jade. That happy is the man who is contented with his lot.
Mr. Kwan. Mr. Kwan. It's all right, Miss Loring. Mr. Kwan is contented.
You mean that was all there was to the treasure, Mr. Holliday? Just that proverb?
That's right, Susie. Maybe it's the best after all. You see, we beat our brains out going after something, and when we've got it, the thing on the other side of the hill always looks better.
Happy is the man who is contented with his lot. Gee, you know something, Mr. Holliday?
What, Susie?
I can't think of anything silly to say.
That's as it should be. Good night, Susie.
Next week, same time, through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holliday in Box 13.
Box 13, on Tuned 2 yesterday, released for syndication on December 20th, 1948. And with cases closed, that wraps it up for this hour of mystery on Tuned 2 yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.